This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You are listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mukhtar together with Philip C. and Kusu Chuang.
Guten Morgen.
Guten Morgen.
Good morning.
It is a Friday, 26th of November, 7:06 in the morning. Well, we'll be covering the top stories in the newspapers and portals in just a bit. But first, we recap how global markets ended trading yesterday.
Nespresso, bringing you the perfect blend of global market analysis and insights.
Well, the US markets were actually closed due to Thanksgiving, as we know. In Asia, though, the Nikkei was up by 0.7%. The Hang Seng was up by 0.2%. In China and Singapore, they were both down by 0.2%. And in Malaysia, of course, we also dropped by 0.3%.
So for a view on international markets, we have with us Carlos Casanova, senior economist at UBP. Good morning, Carlos. Happy Friday. Now, the USD has been strengthening against emerging market currencies, with the Turkish lira taking a significant hit of late. Do you see a contagion effect in this region?
Good morning and happy Friday to you all. We are seeing a lot of volatility, of course, in the emerging markets FX space. And a lot of that is linked to strong US dollar. That is the main driver of some of the weakness that we are observing in Asia Pacific. But of course, depending on each country, there will be domestic risks or idiosyncratic risks that might be aggravating those trends. So in the case of Turkey, there are factors related to the policy response from the Turkish government that are making things worse, and that is not going to affect Asia. So we're not pricing in a spillover yet, because Asian countries have been a lot more proactive since the Asian financial crisis. The financial situation of these countries is in a good position to sustain outflows. So we don't expect a contagion. But if we do see other emerging markets in LATAM or even Russia, becoming affected by this, then of course, if the general market is negative, then that could impact Asia. But for the time being, current account surpluses and better financials imply a very low risk of contagion.
Yeah, and Carlos, since we're on the subject of the US dollar, one must also discuss the fact that inflation is definitely now clearly not transitory as expected. Goldman's is now forecasting that the Fed will double the pace of taper and starting in January. And its best guess is that a rate hike will begin in June, which is far, far earlier than a lot of people expected. What are your first impressions of that?
As an economist, I don't necessarily agree with Goldman's view. Of course, market changes very rapidly. The market is pricing very aggressive policy normalization in the US. But it is also true that, we tend to have a slightly longer horizon for making these considerations. And so the factors that are underpinning inflation in the short term, they will start to phase out in the second half of the year. I mean, inflation will remain extremely elevated throughout the first quarter, and that will fuel this sort of discussion. But overreacting to that inflation without fully understanding what the negative base effect and the slowdown in the second half of 2022 entails would be a policy mistake in our opinion. So, there's a lot of talk about stagflation recently, but remember, stagflation in the 1970s was a prolonged period of very high inflation and very weak GDP growth. What we are seeing in the US right now is very high GDP growth and very high inflation as a result of all the COVID-19 disruptions. So it is high nominal GDP growth, not a stagflation environment. In fact, if they overreact and cripple this recovery in the economy and the reopening, we might very well be in a scenario where GDP decelerates even further. So an aggressive pace of tightening would be a policy mistake, in my opinion. However, we are entering a recovery phase. So, of course, it is most likely that the Fed will hike rates next year. It's just a matter of when and by how much.
So I think I want to just build on that retightening point. The Bank of Korea is hiking rates by 25 basis points. The Monetary Authority of Singapore has really signaled a tightening of monetary policy. So what's happening there? Are they just following what the US Fed is thinking of doing?
So, yes and no. For anything the Fed does affects Asia, of course. As the US dollar has a big impact on Asian currencies. But in Asia, a lot of these economies are leading the recovery. They were recovered faster than the USA. And so it is time to remove some of the policy support. Specifically in the case of Korea, I think there have been concerns about excessive liquidity inflating asset bubbles in the country. So not only was inflation above target at 3.2% last month, but housing prices have been expanding extremely rapidly. They were 16% in October. And this has been a sticking point with the current administration, which is left-wing and has been trying to battle housing prices since the beginning. So they are sort of the policy environment in Korea is more restrictive. They do want to start tapering sooner than expected. That's why they're leading the cycle in Asia, in order to ensure that they are not aggravating some of those risks. We have seen Australia, Singapore, and New Zealand also tightening, and most of the emerging markets in Asia will want to hold until the end of 2022. As they are lagging behind in terms of their post-COVID recovery. If we see significant US dollar strength, however, just on the import inflation and outflow fronts, they might be forced to do one interest rate hike this year. A lot, of course, depends on what happens with the Fed, but that would be extremely negative for growth in the region.
So essentially what you're saying is there are two stories, right, in Asia, one that where the recovery is really pacing ahead and where the for those where the recovery is just starting, essentially, correct, and then monetary policy reflects that?
Correct. So we're seeing divergences in terms of growth with some developed markets that are export-oriented leading, emerging markets that are more domestic-oriented lagging. And that is translating also into diverging trends in terms of monetary policy, with some countries leading the tightening cycle and others holding on to that dovish pause as long as they can until it becomes sustainable due to strong US dollar.
Yeah, Carlos, so where do you think Malaysia's Bank Negara sits on this equation?
Mm-hmm. So for Malaysia, of course, we saw you know, lockdown restrictions being reintroduced. So it is part of the group of economies that is lagging a little bit in terms of its reopening and recovery. In that context, they should look to hold the rate hike for longer. However, Malaysia has a negative real rate differential with the United States. Of course, Korea has the largest negative real rate differential with the US. It's minus 1.2%, so justifying that decision to hike rates this week. But Malaysia also has pressure on the outflows front because of this real rate differential. So it is a possibility that Bank Negara might have to implement 25 basis point rate hike next year. But as I mentioned, they will be monitoring the situation in terms of the economic recovery very closely, because it is one of the countries that just took a little bit longer to reopen due to the structure of the domestic economy.
And Carlos, turning our attention to China, where the zero COVID strategy is still alive and well, but at the same time, it is causing problems. We've seen headlines how China's port congestions are going from bad to worse because of tightening quarantine restrictions. So as the world's largest exporter, how negatively will this impact the US and Europe, do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was in the news this week following an article on Bloomberg that got reposted everywhere else. I would say this is the angle was a little bit skewed. So it does take two to tango. And we are seeing issues in the US and in China that are both contributing to this backlog in terms of global shipping. And it's, of course, exacerbating global inflationary pressures. In the US, it's specific to the US. So we're seeing labor shortages after COVID, no drivers to drive the containers. Outdated zoning policies for their ports, in particular in LA, and also, the fact that they haven't invested in infrastructure mm-hmm. in so long means that their capacity to automate the process is weaker compared to other parts of the world. That is creating a first delay. Of course, once those containers make it out onto sea, you know, they face long quarantines, 7 days in most cases, but it could be longer. Upon entering China, and of course, a large chunk of the supply chain is in China, so those ports need to get in, get loaded. The containers need to get in, get loaded, and get out before you know the Americans and the Europeans can get their goodies in Christmas. So the Chinese quarantine measures are a second delay. So it is part of a broader global issue. It's not entirely China, but given rising cases in the US and in Europe, and the Winter Olympics in February, we do expect that, unfortunately, the problem will only get worse before it gets better, probably in the second quarter, but most likely won't really be felt until the second half of next year.
All right, Carlos, thanks very much for the chat this morning. That was Carlos Casanova, senior economist at UBP in Hong Kong, talking to us about some of the trends that are affecting markets and the economy, saying that the supply chain congestion probably won't really alleviate until the second half of 2022.
I mean, the situation is a complete turkey.
Pun fully intended.
I wonder how long you sat on that, just waiting for your time to shine, Philip. Well, yeah, he raised some points. The fact that the supply chain crisis is a tale of two halves, really, what's happening on this side of the hemisphere and that side of the hemisphere. But if we want to zero in onto what's happening in China with its zero COVID strategy, that has been causing some issues. Some do see it as stalling the full recovery for the Chinese economy itself. In recent weeks, there's been a headline that Chinese authorities have locked in 34,000 people in Shanghai Disneyland for mandatory testing. That's the extent of how serious they are about making sure that COVID is stamped out.
Yeah, and of course, I don't want to be a bit of a pallbearer, but there's been a new strain being discovered in Africa now, right? I think South Africa, they're trying to name it still. I think it's something to do with NU or something.
Yeah.
Very infectious. So I'm struggling to understand why China is still pursuing this zero COVID policy with this 1.4 billion people. That seems almost it's almost impossible to achieve, right? So it is what it is.
I guess they're just waiting for the transition, right? Because there's this Beijing Olympics and such. So I think there's also the point that they were perceived to have started the pandemic.
Yeah.
So I think they want to kind of demonstrate that they can contain it very well. And to be fair, they have done a very good job in containing it. But the question is, how long can you contain this, right? I mean, look at the Disneyland situation with the 34,000. I mean, the magic there has been totally lost.
No fantasy kingdom there, for sure.
The dreams come true turn to nightmare for some, I'm sure.
Yes.
All right, 7:19 in the morning. We're taking a quick break. And then after that, what's making headlines in the newspapers and portals today? We'll take you through that. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Nespresso starts your morning right together with the Morning Run, bringing you the perfect blend of global market insights with expert guests.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.